The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files, and this is the 99th interview on the Knapsack Files podcast feed. Can you believe it? It's been a long way since I sat down with Matt Key in, I believe, May of 2013. And me and the great Matt Key talked for about 29 minutes, and I thought that's about as much as I'm capable of doing. But here we are now, years later, 99 interviews from that point. Other shows still on here. You guys appreciate the support. And to new supporters, new listeners, I appreciate you as well. Let's start this journey together. And speaking of journeys together, my guest tonight, he and I went on a quick little journey together back in the heady days of 2015 and 2016. And that is when we worked together at Defy Media. It is producer, writer, swell guy, Michael Rainey.
I'm going to put that on my business card. Swell guy. I think that's what's been holding me back.
Is that the one? That's the thing that's going to put you over the edge.
Writers and producers, plenty of those in Hollywood. Swell guys.
Well, as we're learning, not a lot of swell guys in Hollywood.
That's true. That's true.
So maybe you and I should broadcast that a little more.
Yeah.
Man, where did you start in this career? Now, so you and I, backstory, Matt working at Defy Media, me for Screen Junkies, you were running the Omi brand, which, among many things you were doing, and the show Man at Arms?
Man at Arms was the big hit on Omi.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, it's a show where blacksmiths recreate swords from movies and video games, and they do amazing work. They really do. And I totally stole one of the things when I left. I got the Predator arm blades that's sitting in my living room right now.
I think you know, but I think I can officially say I don't own them. Mm-hmm. But I did. There was two Xena Warrior Princess items.
Right.
That no longer are there.
Yeah, no, somebody asked me about it later and was like, what happened to those Xena? And I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah. To be fair, someone else gave me permission to take them.
Right.
Another producer there.
I
didn't just swipe them. Right. But I think
I wouldn't hold it against you if you did, but I appreciate that nevertheless.
I regret doing it for other reasons, but
sure.
I'm glad I took them. Yeah, no, the work was great, and you and I just hit it off kind of the same ilk, which is dangerous when people of the same ilk get together. They can feed off each other's ilkness.
Yes.
But you are, when did this begin, this journey, this career? Because we're in this digital media thing, which is crazy.
Right. You know, it's funny because I had no intention of going into this initially. I was theater man. That was you know.
Okay.
It was a big part of my high school experience. I did not have the best high school experience, and so like many people, I kind of fell into the arts as a form of escapism.
Right.
And it meant a lot to me then. And so, you know, I was a theater teacher was kind of my plan. I went to Arizona State. Well, I grew up in Arizona, so Arizona State made sense at the time.
Right, right. And you grew up in Prescott?
Prescott.
Because my girlfriend's from Prescott.
Okay. Well,
born in another part of Arizona, but raised in Prescott. So
it's,
I understand.
That's the number one faux pas is calling it Prescott.
Yeah.
And that's just, that would be terrible.
How dare you?
So I ended up in Phoenix a couple years at ASU and ended up hating all of the theater classes and most of the environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just a bunch of people that were very, very proud of art. And I'm like, it's a job. Like, it's like, yes, we're art and all that, but it's also just a job and we're all here to do it. Yeah. So just do it.
You and I are similar in that regard.
Yeah.
I love artists, respect artists.
I do too.
Totally. But when it comes down to me, I'm like, can I just have a cheeseburger and we'll recite some lines?
Exactly. And so I ended up taking the two film classes that they had available at the time just to, you know, fill in some electives. And I was like, oh, I actually really enjoy this. This is it's so much more enjoyable. And then you get a tangible product at the end. I mean, there is something very special about theater and the ethereal quality of whatever performance you saw will never be seen again.
Right, right, right.
And there is something special about that. And there's a connection between the audience, the performers, and all of that. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, I found that I really enjoyed the, you know, having a tangible product that you can share and goes so much further than the theater. That held a lot of appeal for me.
How long were you looking at theater as your life? Did it start very young in the sense of, because this sounds like a, though it's the same, same football field,
right,
different yard lines. That's a change in life goals.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's always been a part of my life. My dad was a theater major as well. And
right.
It's actually how my dad and my stepmother met. Doing theater together. And so
right.
It's always been a part of the family. But I think for me, it's as much as it's been a while since I've done the performing side and done the theater side.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was a lot of fun, and I always enjoyed that being able to express myself in that way. But
right.
you know, at some point it didn't appeal to me the way it used to, and I needed something new. And you know, after I went through the two film classes that were available, I was like, okay, I need to try something new.
Yeah. Wanted to be a film or a theater teacher.
Well, I figured,
and that was the route.
I also wanted a full time job. And there's like
that's smart.
You know, there's plenty of writers and actors and all that that are, you know, you do so many other things on the side because it turns out it's a little difficult to get started in that field. So I figured theater teacher. You know,
right.
it was also. My home life was kind of falling apart during high school, and my theater teacher was someone who really stood out to me as someone who was there for me and very supportive,
right.
and it made a big difference in my life, and it was something where I wanted to be able to give that back at some point as well,
right.
and it's still something that's kind of in the back of my mind.
See?
I would love to teach in the future.
Swell guy.
I try.
So you make the switch. Two film classes, something connects in you. You probably had always been a movie fan. I get that part of it, but then you decide to change gears completely.
Pretty much, yeah. I tried to get into Cal State Long Beach, but I didn't have California residency at the time, so I ended up using my parents' address in California to get residency. And in the meantime, I ended up working at the Utah Shakespeare Festival for a few years.
Oh, wow.
It was a little circuitous route to get to Los Angeles. The Shakespeare Festival was a trip. It was a lot of fun.
I've heard about these Shakespeare festivals, man.
It's crazy because Utah in particular, because it's I don't know if you're aware, a very conservative state.
It's a little, no Diet Cokes allowed, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
Calm it down.
The town that we were in, Cedar City, was 93% Mormon.
Sure.
And it was, I think, I don't know, 20,000 people maybe in that city.
Right.
But everyone that worked at the festival came in from out of state.
Right, right.
We're all, you know, like little hippie types. And the way that the festival was set up is they actually owned a couple apartment buildings.
Okay.
And so the people, you know, because you're only working for like 6 months out of the year.
Right.
So everyone that worked, we're all living together. We're all, you know, the little pocket of liberalism in the middle of very conservative Utah. And so just every weekend was crazy.
It
was
we
would start every season with the Bacchanal Bash.
Mm. Explain more.
The Roman god Bacchus, who is the god of theater and wine and debauchery.
They go together. All three things go together.
Exactly. So, you know, we would celebrate him in hopes of having a successful season, which really what that means is a 55-gallon trash can filled with jungle juice.
Sounds
which for us was, I think, one part Everclear, one part Hawaiian Punch, and one part water, I think, was the mixture.
When Everclear is your base.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a great...
Well, because...
That's a great time.
There was only so much alcohol to find, and so you had to go for the really strong stuff and then dilute it out.
To pack the punch.
Pack the punch, exactly.
That's electrified Hawaiian punch.
Yeah.
55-gallon drum.
I was technically arrested one of those parties in Utah.
They
didn't actually take me in because it was like, that's more effort than it's worth.
Your swell guy status is getting
cooler. I know.
It's getting layered.
Ooh, yeah. No, I'm like an onion.
Yeah.
I was disturbing the peace. I was like, oh, that's there's a certain swagger to that, well, I suppose.
How like fill in the 55-gallon drum or just?
Well, no, this was, I didn't actually have the big gallon drum. And I think that they were disappointed they couldn't, you know, nail me for like giving alcohol to minors or anything like that. No, I was putting on a superhero party.
Sure.
And the rule was that everyone had to dress up as a superhero.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is like middle of July.
Yeah.
And like we had prizes set up and all that sort of thing. And literally 10 minutes into the party. And bear in mind, because we're all in the same apartment building, the parties just happen in the parking lot. Because we all just
you're
come
not disturbing.
Down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But we got surrounded by cops. Like 10 cops showed up surrounding us from every direction, so no one could leave.
Right.
And they were like, oh, we're shutting this party down. and being the one who put the party together,
You had to step forward.
I had to step forward. And
who
was,
here is responsible exactly. for this shenanigans of debauchery?
And so I was charged with disturbing the peace, and I had to pay, I think, $150 fine or something like that. But actually, everyone at the party chipped in, so I paid like $20.
You actually came out ahead?
Yes, you made money off this thing. That's how you do it.
So you're up here doing Shakespeare. You performing behind the scenes, building things. What do you do? All of it?
Behind the scenes, yeah. I mean, because it's to me, again, it's a job.
Right.
The culture there was completely, it was night and day difference between the performers and you know, the run crew, the people behind the scenes.
Right.
And it's so much more fun with the behind the scenes people because you're showing up, you're doing your job, and obviously you want the everything to go well, you want the performance to do well. But I remember very specifically, like, as you mentioned, you're a cheeseburger guy.
Yeah.
I'm out on the dock with a buddy of mine because he's having a cigarette, and one of the actors comes out and is like, you know what I'm missing? I haven't had duck liver pate in a while. And the other actor was like, oh, I've got a great chicken liver pate recipe. You need to come over to my place tonight. We'll have chicken liver pate. And oh, that's fantastic. And they just were so excited. And I went inside with my friend and I was like, if I ever feel a need for duck liver or chicken liver pate, punch me in the head.
Punch me
in. And same goes for him.
Take me to a 7-Eleven. Let's get some Tostitos and pizza right then and there.
Exactly.
So you're up in Utah, kind of hovering around your career goals, and you want to make this big move. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be a star. You don't want to be an actor. You don't want to be. You want to go and make things. How do you approach that? How do you make that leap? That's a giant leap, even though it may seem small.
Well, I did eventually make my way to Long Beach and finished film school. Mm. After film school, I went into a truly, truly horrid internship. Mm. I won't say the man who started it.
Would we know?
Probably not. Probably he didn't. No, because of course, the most horrible people are the people that their careers have gone nowhere and they have to take their stress out on somebody.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
But what I will say for the internship was this, is that I did learn a lot. Yeah. And there was, I think, 20 interns there at the time.
Yeah.
Like he had like one actual employee, and then it was 20 interns.
Sure, it's a good business model.
Yeah, exactly. And there was this real Band of Brothers feel to it.
Okay.
Where it's like, I don't really hang out with anyone from college. I don't really keep track of that crowd, but the intern crowd, like, we've all kind of gone our own separate ways and our careers, and we're all, you know, building our way up the ranks.
Still connected.
That's where I'm still connected. That's where I still talk to people.
That's kind of almost the equivalent of film school. I think that's the reason to go to film schools is cheaper or free equipment and the people you meet to use later
on. Exactly. The piece of paper, the diploma you get is completely worthless. It's what did you learn while you were there, and who did you meet?
So you're interning, this is what, film production, or
this is more film development.
Oh, okay.
Well, specifically TV development. It was a lot of reality shows. I mean, that's the success that the owner had been in reality TV, so it was all coming up with the next reality
program. What year is this? What era?
This would have been 2011.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Not that long ago.
No, not at all.
I know you're slightly younger than me, a little less gray in your beard. You have no gray in your beard. Good. God bless you.
Right.
But yeah, all right. I sometimes, you're so wise and seasoned where you're even at Defy would give me advice, you know?
I've lived a lot of life.
You've lived a lot of life. Yeah, so that's I'm thinking like, say. I'm almost expecting you to be like in 1994, not that I think you're that old, but that you've just, you know, in the heady days of reality TV, the beginnings. But all right. But 2011's a while ago too.
You know, this interview is a good boost to my ego. There's so many compliments coming from you. I feel good about myself.
You're a swell guy who seems 80. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So that's all I've wanted is to present for myself.
This is what, as you know, the coming to LA to chase the dream, whatever it is, whether it be an Oscar or to get a good union job on a set.
Right.
It is daunting, and I think a lot of people, the curtain's been pulled back, but so it's less likely that you out there listening are going to take it for granted, but I think it's still the struggle, especially at the beginning, to where you are now, it must seem like ages ago.
It really does, because, I've been working digital production ever since that internship. I ended up, it led me to a job at a smaller production house.
Okay.
I think there was 9 employees at that place. So, and digital production in general, you tend to wear a lot of hats.
Absolutely.
Like you what needs to be done? Oh, we don't have the money to hire somebody, so you're doing it now.
That's
digital production.
Yeah.
And so because of that, it's given me a lot of weird and interesting opportunities. And so the sort of thing where it's like at least 3 or 4 times a year, you have to stop yourself and be like, what am I doing for a living? Is that like, how do you describe to somebody else? I'm like, no, I'm casting chimpanzees today. Like, that's my job for the day. And that's like, okay, sure, why not?
I'm remaking Aragorn's sword.
Exactly. And, and you know, and it's, there is always that, that, you know, as stressful as it gets and as long as the hours are and, you know, frustrating as the corporate environment can be, every once in a while you have to step back and be like, oh yeah, but that's what I do with it. I just play around.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That perspective's needed. I would have that. I need that kick in the pants even now. And walking into your office a lot of times at Defy was that for me too. Mm-hmm. Sitting down, finding the same person. We both can kind of complain often about the same person. And then we move on with our day knowing we're okay.
Right.
That we're just doing stupid internet videos.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the things that I make, somebody's watching while they take a shit. Like, yeah. That's kind of my, like, so can you really be that stressed about, like, can you really be that concerned? There's no UN peace talks breaking down. There's no cure for cancer right around the corner. Right. It's just, we're making something to entertain people for 5 to 10 minutes.
To distract them from their lives.
Exactly. And then and don't get me wrong. I think there's a real value to that escapism.
Absolutely.
Everybody needs it.
Yeah, especially with the world today.
Absolutely.
Horrible things going on. We need this escape.
Right. You just need to stop and laugh and talk and share, you know, whatever fun video you have.
I remember our good friend Adam Heiner, who was the VP of production for a while at Defy before he left other things. Sometimes he was such a cool, calm cat sometimes, and it would just be his the horrible fights over budgets and new freelance producers coming in screaming, and he'd just be like, guys, we're making YouTube videos.
Exactly.
Calm down. Calm down. It was always a good lesson. It was always a good reminder. But this path, this didn't exist. And I always say this, my job that I have now and the job I had at Screen Junkies didn't exist 3, 4, 5 years prior. Mm-hmm. So when you're in 2011, you're thinking you're going to end up in reality TV or you're going to produce movies or something. And then you're in this weird digital media world.
Yeah, I mean, what really set it apart for me is writing was always my chief passion. Even back in the theater days, it was like I wanted to be a writer. It's again, it's that tangibility. It's that wanting to leave something behind.
It's a legacy.
It's a legacy.
You're obsessed with legacy, and I love it.
Absolutely. you know, and there's as much as I, you know, play around with the idea, like, yeah, I'm also an artist at heart. We're all artists at heart. Like, we all have that inside of us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just a separation of those that know when to stop being artists and get the job done.
Or have pate.
So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know, writing was always a passion. It was something I was always interested in. And so when I started with digital media, I ended up finding little opportunities to do that.
Right.
For a while, we were producing a sketch comedy series for Yahoo called Sketchy. It was a lot of fun. It was a weekly, you know, 5-minute sketch. Did a lot of producing on that and met a lot of cool people. And I actually had the chance to write a few of them.
Yeah.
And once I kind of, you know, started spreading the wings a little bit and at that job, it was like, oh, okay, you're not just on the producer side. There's a creative side to you as well. I got to kind of, you know, try out new ideas and that sort of thing. And that's what eventually led me to the job at Defy of kind of taking a you know, broader overlook of the creative and direction for the channel. And it's funny because it's, you know, my position at Defy was never something that I aspired to.
Yeah.
It's something I kind of fell into and was surprised at how much I enjoyed.
Why is that? Why do you think you were surprised by it?
I think it's, as a creative person, there's two different, you know, kind of approaches to things. And there's the, okay, I have a vision and I want to see it, you know, fulfilled. Right. And then there's someone else has a vision and you realize, oh, you have a chance to help them fulfill it. And I think that's one of the things I always find most satisfying as a producer is it's not necessarily my own projects. Although obviously I do find, you know, satisfaction with that. It's, oh, here's somebody else who has something they really want to accomplish. They really want to express, they really want to show you. And I have a chance to help them do that.
That's a good point because I also think that's the difference between a producer and say me, where I, you know, had this title of producer and that wasn't my career goal and I can do it and I can get joy. There's certainly joy in it, but jokes aside, that is a special thing to really foster someone else's idea, make it your own with them and see it through to the end. It's a special kind of success.
Absolutely.
And not everyone's cut out for that.
No,
ego-driven town.
Well, and that's the thing, is that there's so many... Oh God, producer is such a nebulous title that could really mean anything you want.
In the digital media world, it means literally some night's going to get a birthday cake for Spencer.
Oh, 100%, yes. And that's the thing, is there's a lot of people that just know that producer is important in some way, and they just want that title.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as soon as There's work involved? Well, I'm not. No, I'm an executive producer, it turns out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the title I want. Yes. I want the EP, yeah.
But it really is. I mean, you know, I think there's this kind of can-do attitude with digital that I've always appreciated. And I think about it, you know, I have, you know, a lot of friends in the TV and the film world, and you get stuck in one thing, and that's all you
that's
do.
That's it.
That's it. Yeah. And the other thing about digital that I've always enjoyed is, you know, there's pros and cons to the complete lack of budget. It's like, okay, you have $17 to make this thing.
Right.
But because it's only $17, make whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, any project on television or film, like, you know, I have a friend who does TV development, and, you know, they're working on, like, maybe two projects a year.
Right.
Maybe those get sold. Maybe they don't. They're on to the next thing.
Right.
Whereas with digital, it's like, what are we doing this week? Okay, we got these three things. Great. Moving on to the next one. Like, there's such a quick turnaround, and because of that, it's like, what do you want to try?
Yeah.
Great. Go try it. Oh, it didn't work? Oh, well, we're on to the next one. It doesn't matter.
You're learning so many skills, you talk about these hats in digital media.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I learned pretty quickly, coming to this from another field and being more of a radio podcast guy. And like, yeah, and you've said the turnaround. It's pretty impressive what happens there, where it's like, cool, on Monday, we're going to do a game show on Friday.
Exactly, yes.
Can you go get a set built, cast it, write all the questions? Thanks.
You
have to make it happen. It's almost like the appeal of Saturday Night Live, where you hear, you know, they're writing a full 90-minute show in 3-4 days and getting it up.
Exactly.
That's hard. So you're finding some joy in that, but it's frustrating. And why do you think this digital media world, I always say it's the future, but it's also not, like, it's not working. It's not working the right way or the way we want it to work.
I think the problem is that it's such a new medium. And while there's plenty of performers and you know, influencers is the appropriate
term. Influencers. Yes, I learned that quick.
You know, there's plenty of people that have grown up with YouTube, but none of them are making the decisions. Mm-hmm. None of the people that really understand the culture hold the money and have the connections and know what they're doing. I mean, everyone at top is someone who came up in a different medium or just has a lot of money. And it's like, oh, YouTube, that's the thing I'm supposed to invest in.
Yeah. Right.
And they don't really know how to approach it. And it really is its own beast. I mean, and I would argue to some extent, even the giant distribution models, YouTube doesn't know what YouTube is.
Right.
Snapchat doesn't know what Snapchat is. Facebook doesn't know what Facebook is. Right. They all know it's the future. They all know it's important. They all know it's how you reach people.
Right.
But nobody actually understands the culture and what goes into that.
Yeah. Yeah, or the changes that they make.
Exactly.
Now with Twitter, you can write 14 paragraphs. We didn't want that.
That makes no difference whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
Snapchat is developing content now, and it's like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody's going to watch it. Nobody's going to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, best of luck to everyone who works at Snapchat. I hope it goes well for you. But we learned our lesson from Vine a year ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like, it's not successful. There's no business model there that you can pull from.
And you're so right. It is such a new medium. This is like film in like 1912, you know, like we don't quite know. So I think it will grow, but like, you know, guys like you and me, we come to it from different paths, and you're right. Like, not that I don't feel like I'm out of touch. I really don't. I'm part of what's going on. But like at the same time, you know, I look at my 11-year-old cousin flipping around on YouTube and talking about things she likes and different apps and this and that. And it's like, okay, someone will figure it out. It might not be us, because we're still tied to, I think, traditional success, traditional ways of doing things, you know, but the digital, I mean, the budget number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are the world.
And
we have 10 bucks to do it.
If I can get it, let me get a little existential, a little deep
please.
For a moment here.
I want this.
I mean, I think people go online for three reasons.
Mm.
You want to be informed about something.
Right.
You want escapism or you want to connect.
Yeah.
And the connection is the thing that everyone is trying to make and can't, because it's not something you can force. It has to be organic.
Right.
You know, Facebook works because you're connected with your friends and you're sharing things with each other and, they, you know, have similar interests, and therefore whatever pops up on your page, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
But there's all these interesting approaches to Facebook and YouTube and, you know, people trying to squeeze something into that model that doesn't really fit, because they don't know why we're here in the first place. And I actually don't think it's a generational thing. I mean, sure, you know, you grow up with whatever you're more used to, you know, swiping right or tapping left or whatever the hell.
Sure, yeah, I think it's swipe right.
Sure.
I think you want to swipe right.
Right. I'm still waiting.
You're still waiting.
Um, But at the end, we still, all of us want those same three things from right. our online entertainment. And right. as long as you're finding the connection, like, that's all that really matters, you know? And you know, everyone's always asking, how do we get the next viral video?
Yeah.
You don't. That's not something you can make.
Oh, I hear that question so much at work right now.
It's the worst. I'm like, and anytime somebody asks me that,
yeah.
it's like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. Got it.
Yeah.
Done. The yeah. same thing with like anyone who's like, how do we connect with millennials? Well, you can't.
Good luck.
Because you just said that.
Exactly. If I have to hear one more time, we need to find our honest trailers, you're not going to find it.
Yeah.
You know, that got found by accident and became its own thing. CinemaSins found itself by accident.
Exactly.
You know, Red Letter Media find itself by accident. Like, yeah, it just happens. But you've been in that position to try to develop these kind of things.
Yeah, and it isn't the easiest thing. But yeah. I think at the end of the day, what really boils down to, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is finding someone who cares about something.
Mm-hmm.
What do you care about? Great, go do it.
Right.
And either it has an audience or it doesn't.
Right, right.
And the thing is, and that's kind of the wonder of the internet and the global world that we live in now, mm-hmm. is that everything has an audience. Yeah. I remember very specifically, this is like early days of the internet back in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
I barely remember those. Yes, exactly. I had a friend in high school who was a goth, you know, just
sure.
head to toe black, you know, long right, hair right. and very creepy looking. Nicest guy in the world. Like if I had to ask someone for a kidney, he's the man I would ask. But he looks like he has body parts in his freezer. Like that's just...
And might.
He might. But I mean, I'm sure he asked, so yeah. that's fine. I remember, you know, he was on goth sewing forums when the internet first started. Like this yeah. was before YouTube yeah. or anything. Like, because it's really hard to find goth clothes in Prescott. and so if you want all black clothing, you have to make your own. And so
yeah.
he was on sewing forums for other goths who had run into the similar situation and,
yeah.
you know, had to come up with whatever outfit. And that, to me, that's what the internet's all about. And there's pros and cons to that.
Right, right, right.
Because it's very easy to fall into a bubble of like, oh, well, everyone is a goth sewer. And I'm like, yeah. no, they're not.
No, they're not.
I'm glad you found your people, but there's the rest of the world we also need to explore.
Yeah.
But the thing is it was something that was passionate for him,
yeah.
and he found an audience. He found a community to be a part of.
Right.
And ultimately, that's all we're trying to do. Like, that's all you can really accomplish is, what do you care about?
Yeah.
Find the other people that care about that as well, and start your community, start your story.
And maybe take some time to do it. And that
yes.
yeah, and that's the other thing. And I look at it again, there's money involved, there's pressure.
Yeah.
There's numbers and these
we all gotta pay our bills.
Yeah, and these companies come in. Like I envy some of the folks out there who could do it on their own. Like, and also actually the Knapsack Files here started as, you know, I was working, producing on my free time for Schmoes No mm-hmm. and their podcast. And it was like, I'm going to start doing my own thing. And there's been a couple times very fair offers to join like the Schmoes No podcast network. And I've always wanted to keep this as far as I can, even though I'm connected to the world and interview a lot of the same people and stuff, because I want it to be mine. So I envy the people that kind of can sit down with a, you know, 4K streaming Mevo camera and just do it on their own
yeah.
and figure it out. Because then you and I get to these points where these jobs and these companies and these someone in a big office goes, should we invest in the internet? Here's yeah. $500 million. Change everything.
Yes.
And that's a hard road to make fun viral content in.
Exactly. Well, and then there's the same, you know, it's like, oh, should we invest? Here's the money. You start working on it. And it's like, well, that's not how you make TV.
Right.
We're not making TV. We're making this is a different
yeah.
medium with different situations that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, people still need to get paid and
yeah.
like have, you know.
And the ways you make it a TV show have some strategies and best practices that we could certainly learn to
sure,
use.
Sure, there's certain aspects of that we'd love to have.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it's you know, I think no matter what the medium is, everyone's mm. looking for that next big hit. You know, it's,
yeah, yeah.
Do you see the news today or
sure.
recently that Amazon is starting the Lord of the Rings?
Oh yeah, series? Yeah, yeah. The multi-season commitment.
Everybody wants their own Game of Thrones. It's yeah. not going to work out.
It's not going to work.
Sorry,
I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, but it's
too.
Not going to work out.
I think I was 9 when I started reading that.
Right.
You know,
you just finished it last year.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's the NFL playbook thing. A team wins a Super Bowl with a certain style of offense or a certain style of defense, and every owner in the league says we have to copy that.
Right.
And then no one wins the Super Bowl but that team or no one else. Or a new style comes along. Yeah, and there's so much of that. And then you also have to kind of, oddly, like you said, stay in your lanes, which can be frustrating. Mm-hmm. I get frustrated sometimes over at my job now where we'll try something new. It's not just, we're still discussing and celebrating movies, but we're not talking about the news in a 55-minute discussion format.
Right.
And that doesn't get received well. And so you have to remember, well, you found your group that cares, and then they may not care about the other thing you care about or the other way you care about doing it.
Exactly. And I think there's also, I think it was Chris Rock who said, you know, the difference between stand-up comedians and you know, rock and roll musicians.
Yeah.
For a rock and roll musician, they want to hear the exact same songs they've heard every time you've toured.
Yes.
They want to hear your biggest hits. And if you try to play anything else, they get really pissed off. And stand-up comedy is the exact opposite. If you tell a joke you've already told, they don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of... Also, I didn't ask you before we started. Mm. Is it? I'm just cursing up a storm here.
It's all right.
Okay.
You know, to just... You know,
I haven't dropped the F-bomb yet.
Yeah, keep that one out.
I don't care.
My mom will care, and iTunes ratings will care, but I'm okay. I want you to be you. I've also not known you to be a big potty mouth.
I'm not a big potty mouth, but I, every once in a while one slips out.
I mean, when you're talking about a Chris Rock story,
it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
But no, just that idea of, you know, that separation between those two mediums of like, one, they want to hear the same thing every time.
Yes.
And one, it's got to be fresh every time.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the big mistake that everyone makes is they see some success and they're like, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if our audience wanted that, they can just go watch it over there. So we have to come up with our thing that's different and new.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to say, well, look at what other channels are doing. Then it's other things.
Sure.
You know, I've had some fights recently of like, that channel's get 600,000 views on that video explaining why Darth Vader sits down, during fights.
Exactly.
Like, make a video about that. And I'm like, it's not going to do well because that's what they do.
Exactly.
Let's find what we do and do it the best we can. This is a weird industry we're in. It's even it's this weird subsection of old Hollywood. Do you have any? How do you look at the future here? I fret that I can't be 50 talking Star Wars on a YouTube channel.
See, I disagree.
You disagree?
I do.
Why is that?
Because
pump me up.
There are other 50-year-olds out there, who care about Star Wars and understand how YouTube works enough to find you.
They'll stick with it.
They'll stick with. Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Is that like, I think. Part of the digital revolution is the nerd revolution. It's the idea that, you know, when we were kids, video games and comic books, that was child's play.
Right.
And now, you know.
It's adult's play.
It's adult's play. It's exactly. It's like all those kids grew up and decided, we still like those toys and we're still going to play with them.
Oh, have I?
Right. And so, you know, I think there's a cultural shift that has happened.
Right.
The best part of that is that all these things that used to be taboo are no longer taboo. So let's explore it in however we want to explore it.
Yeah. Wild West.
Oh, the Wild West. Exactly. Yeah. And so everyone that, you know, if I want to get on YouTube and see who's talking about Star Wars and
I'm there
and you're there.
Okay.
And
so I'm not going to be a failure.
You're not going to be a failure. No, not at all. I think it's really what it comes down to is like anything else. It's where's your community?
Where's your community?
Where are the other people like you?
Yeah.
Cause they're looking for you.
You just got to find them. You got to let them find you.
Exactly.
And find yourself among there. But
do you
have an eye on the future? You've changed. You went from theater to being a theater teacher to digital production. You want to be a writer. You've written, make no mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you approach continuing on and where do you want to be?
Where the next step in my career?
Yeah.
Because
that will help someone else find it.
Yes. You know, I think for me there's well, it's like you said, everyone's got to pay the bills.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everyone's got their own personal thing that they want to create.
Sure.
And so the next step for me is actually starting my own business and kind of doing that for myself. Because I've spent, you know, better half of a decade here giving away ideas, essentially. I mean, I got paid for it, don't get me wrong.
It was a job. But
it's a job. And you know, this, for me, the most frustrating thing as a creative person is coming up with something that you really believe in, that you really have a passion for. And you're like, oh, you know what? I took the time. I did this right. And I know it's solid. I know it'll work.
Yeah.
And then watching it go nowhere because you did it for somebody else. I wrote a pilot with a friend of mine a few years ago around Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big kind of cultural revolution in the beginning of the 60s with the women of Newsweek. You know, they were just secretaries and nothing more at the time. And like, no, we have something to contribute as well. And, you know, it was a big kind of story from the history of Newsweek as they were shutting down, as they were getting rid of their print edition. Mm. You know, a lot of this was kind of coming back up again.
Right.
And so we wrote this really solid pilot around, you know, the changes of that era and kind of, and basically it took place in two different eras. It was early 2000s and then the early 60s and kind of, you know, showing the difference between the, you know, the progress of journalism in each instance.
Right.
Couldn't have been more proud of that script. Went absolutely nowhere.
Right.
And I don't even have the option of trying to take it somewhere myself because I was working for somebody else at the time and I wrote for them. Yeah. So, you know, that's
stuck.
That to me is the most frustrating thing. And I know a lot of creative people that are, that, you know, feel very beaten down in this industry because of that. It's like, well, I need a job to pay the bills and this guy's paying me to write.
Right.
So he owns it.
Yeah.
But that's the end of it. That's you know, it. The train ends there at that station and there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I mean, and I think that's part of the, again, part of that digital revolution and part of the beauty of where we're at in the world now is like, it's easier than ever to make stuff yourself.
It is. On
a
phone.
We're sitting here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you got a laptop and a couple of mics and and we're making a podcast.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is a luxurious studio, Mike. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what? I mean, I'm drinking from a Forest Moon of Endor glass right now.
As you should.
It's the most luxurious glass.
I gave you that with a lot of love in my heart.
Oh, I felt the love. but the fact that, you know, you're able to create something 15 years ago, that wouldn't have been possible.
Impossible.
But here you go.
Yeah.
And who knows what this leads to?
I'm reaching more people now here with this podcast, my Force Center podcast, than I did my small town radio job.
Exactly.
And that was, and I couldn't, when I got let go, I couldn't just go get another job.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't exist. There was too many gatekeepers, too many waste. You know, it was like, and you know, and there's a downside to, hey, everyone can do it. But also with what you're talking about here, finding the, you know, finding your way, finding your community and having controlling your own destiny. That's a good goal to have.
That's exactly it. And you know, like just go make it. And if it's no good, great. Make another one. And if that's no good, make a third. Like, just keep going at it until you find something that works for you and works for the world. And
And you'll find it.
And then you'll
find it. And that a lot digital teaches you that.
Absolutely.
Digital absolutely teaches that. The it's fast. It's immediate. The success and the failure. How you know, you and I now things have changed. When you and I used to talk, we shared a common bond, and that was loneliness. I've been fortunate enough to find a great girl.
I'm very happy for you.
What is it now? 6-7 months in.
Okay.
We're debating over the time.
Okay.
She has this kind of like, it started when we started texting. I was like, we weren't quote official until then. It's becomes this junior high argument of when we started.
Right.
I just want to know when the anniversary is.
Right. It's harder to mark on a calendar than like, oh, we started texting in a flirtatious manner.
Yes. Figuratively, our love started here.
Right.
A little. But you and I, you counseled me through some dark times.
Oh, okay.
I can only hope I did the same for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is a swipe right generation, but we're not swipe right guys.
We are not.
That's tough. That's tough.
Yeah. I mean, tell me if this sounds familiar to you.
It does.
Already. I wish I'd met you in 5 years.
That's tough. Yes.
There was a lot of like, oh, you're a settle down guy and I'm not settling down yet. So
yeah,
you know, thank you, but
and look, and this is no blame to them.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
no,
everyone's at a different point in their life, and I've never held it against them. I mean, like, you're either into it or you're not, and if you're not, that's fine. Like, move on to, you know.
Yeah, you and I are good
later. It's, you know, whatever.
You and I are what I would call like the. I failed at it at times, to be clear, but we're like we're the modern version of the old friend zone guys because that phrase.
Sure.
Has some negative connotations, the idea of taking some power and choice away from the females. We're not that, but there's a certain ilk of men, and we are that ilk. We are the settled down guys.
We are.
We're comfort. We're safe spots, which I wouldn't want it any other way. It just took me a while to find the right person to who wanted to be in that safe spot.
Yes.
So it's tough. It's tough.
It's tough. It's tough. But it's always worth it. Like when you find it and you're in a good spot, always worth it.
Yeah. All right, have you given up yet?
I have not yet. I mean, funny. I actually just recently, this last week, you know, got like, oh, let me try the dating sites again. And I was like, oh, that's why I left.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm also, you know, I'm going to be 34 next year.
Young pup.
Young pup, sure. But I'm also, you know, this coming weekend, I'm going to visit my little baby niece, and she's just adorable. And I say baby, she's actually 3. To me, anything shorter than 2 feet, that's a baby.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Super adorable, and I love spending time with her. And it's, you know, 34 is, it's not that young. And it's definitely, I'm definitely at that point, I'm like, I am a settled down guy, and I'm ready to settle down.
Ready to settle down.
You know, and I've had plenty of people that, oh, you know, you can have, it's different for the man, you can have kids older and all that, and early 40s is plenty of time. And,
sure.
But,
sure.
I don't want to be an old dad. Like, I want to have the energy to, wrestle and play and go out in the park and do all those things. And, you know, and, you know, there is a little part of me that's like, okay, Universe, I've learned my lessons. I've gone through the ups and downs of relationships, and I'm ready to.
You're ready.
To find the one.
It might be. Look, I didn't. I should have given up, but I didn't. So it wasn't like, screw it, I'm going to be alone forever. But I had that feeling. I had that feeling. It was really weird. So when I kind of had to release that, almost in a spiritual sense, up to God or Iron Man, whatever you believe in, I had to kind of say, all right. Take me, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And then it literally, I'm not joking, 2 hours later, a text came that changed my life, you know? So there is something to releasing and being ready for it.
Yes.
And I have faith you're not going to be as old as me when I finally found the right love. I've had a great relationships in the past, by the way, great ones, and you learn from all those relationships.
You do. I mean, I hate to, use the term failed relationship, but it's like, that's a misnomer. That's incorrect. That's not a healthy way of viewing things.
Yeah.
You're learning, you're growing, there's certain things that I look back on as, I made mistakes there, and I've learned, and I didn't make that mistake again. I made a whole new mistake, but each time, you get a little bit closer to being the type of person you need to be to actually make a relationship work.
Absolutely. My therapist used to basically say, they either work or they don't. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
You're either going to marry this woman or you're not. And you're going to, the goal would be to exit in a right way and learn, and both of you learn. That's why I have, in general, I don't have a ton of relationships to draw upon, but I have really good friendships that exist, and they're not as closely connected as, it's a text here and there or an email here and there, but or an Instagram comment, but I learned so much from my exes, and I hope they did, and I feel they did the same. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that comes, too, from just being calm and mature and safe spot, guys.
Yes, absolutely. Because there is, I think there's... Dating is so terrible sometimes. It can be absolutely great. It can be the best thing in the world. And it can be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
And, there's so many people that either are putting themselves out there and being vulnerable and getting hurt, or the flip being like, well, I'm not going to put myself out there. I'm not like, yes, I'm dating, but I'm not going to be vulnerable. And therefore,
wall is up.
Exactly. And then no relationship ever occurs. Yeah. And, it's such a crazy world out there, especially here in Los Angeles. I feel like this is a particularly difficult town to be a single person.
It is. It is.
And so, again, going back to those safe space guys, it's like when you do find the right person.
Yeah.
They know you're someone they can actually relax with and be with.
Right.
And there is something, there's a lot to be said for that. And and I will personally, however many lonely days, how many times they swipe left, I'll live with that. That's fine.
Because
once it's right, it's right.
Yeah.
And you have to remember that if there's only one Mrs. Right and there's 3 billion people, to choose from, what are your chances of finding her on the first try?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, 1 in 3 billion, I suppose.
That would be the odds, 3PO. it is. And dating, I couldn't date. I still can't. If my girlfriend decides to up and leave me, I'm done. I'm gonna call you and say, Rainey, just meet me in the old folks' home when you're ready.
Okay,
I'll be there. Dating. We would have some coworkers. One of our friends, I'll leave her name off for her protector and anonymity.
That as well.
Where every morning at Defy, she'd be sitting there like, oh, I had this date last night. I'm going to one tonight, and there's another guy. And God bless her. And
hasn't changed. She texts me now because there's no couch to sit on. But yes.
Yes. And God bless her. She's a spectacular person.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But it was just, I was always, always admired. Every day it was 14 guys texted her God bless you. Go get yours.
That's just exhausting.
It was
like,
exhausting. But
the time and the energy is like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kudos to the people that do it. And I'm all for it. But like, you know, and the thing is for me, I've never had, I get very bored with people you know, it's, and I mean, not to be rude, but like, yeah. You know, I do need a certain amount of mental stimulation from relationship, whether it's friends or family or professional, you know, serious relationship.
Yeah.
And so all of my relationships, I've been friends with them first.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Because I need to get to know the person and be like, oh, you're someone I actually really enjoy talking to. And that really is going to make a difference. I mean, yeah. You know, you have those people that pop up and they're like,
right.
Ooh, they're cute, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But 10 minutes later, okay, well, can we have a conversation?
Yeah. You and I are such a similar ilk, and that can be problems. And that's why I use that term friend zone. The phrase has been correctly, you know, it's a lot of connotations to it, but there's this weird spot where people, not just guys like you and I know women who do it too. Mm-hmm. You know, you need that comfort zone to really start opening up and to feel like it's worth it and to feel like you can. I'm notorious for not talking to women for 2 to 3 months. My mm-hmm. own girlfriend now, I worked with her. I didn't talk. I said like 3 words to her for 2 months because I was like, I don't know. I'm intimidated. I'm not worth it. That's right. The other big thing is I'm not worth it. Not worth the attention, and I'm just a schlub who likes a cheeseburger and to sit on Mike Rainey's couch in his office. Not a bad place to be. But
it's about finding that person that, yes. Like, oh, I want a schlub. I just want to have a cheeseburger and not be judged for it.
Yes.
So let's go have that and do whatever. And, it, you know,
yeah.
Are you ready? I'm
yeah.
Bring it full circle.
Bring it full circle.
It's about finding your personal connection. it's not be the best version of you can be. I'm not saying that like life doesn't take work. Absolutely. It does. Relationships take work. You should better yourself to find a better person and all that. But at the end of the day, it's not about like, oh, I'm going to get that person. It's I'm going to get the right person.
Yeah.
And the right person is going to be appreciating you for you.
Yeah. That happens.
It does. It absolutely happens. And that's because at the end of the day, if they're, you know,
yeah.
If someone's like, you know, I love the Instagram, you know, it's like, lift up my shirt and show off my abs. And it's like, do you really want someone who only wants you for your abs? Because, that's fun for a night. But then, you know, what do you do the next day? It's like, what are you putting your efforts towards? If you're putting your efforts to being the best person you can be, then you will find someone who appreciates that person. And that's the makings of a good relationship is that personal connection.
It's that personal connection. It's how you find love and make viral videos.
The two things go together.
It's all the same thing. That's all together. I mean, absolutely. Not reveling in the loneliness too. There's a part where I would as you could tell early on, I just loved my own misery, you know. I made some bad decisions.
If misery were an art form.
Yeah.
You would be Rembrandt.
Beautiful. Beautiful. High dollar amount paintings. So that's what I was
exactly.
going for.
I mean, they're all masterpieces.
Yeah.
There's no denying that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's like we all have bad days.
I have bad years.
Exactly. You know, we all have a slump. We all fall into that sometimes. And it's very easy to, you know, it's kind of that self-fulfilling prophecy of like, I'm no good at this and therefore nobody's interested. And you put that energy out into the world and then nobody is interested.
It was my brand. It's still kind of, I struggle. It still kind of is my brand.
No, we've gotten to know you this way.
Yeah.
But we've, you know, we've found the charm underneath.
Found the charm.
Exactly.
Found the charm. And there's definitely charm in you. I have no doubt that you'll... Your fortunes will change.
I have charm. I just have to find the right person who appreciates it.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Absolutely. Because you are a deep soul. You're a deep soul. I can't thank you enough. I'll thank you publicly for getting me through some tough days at Defy Media.
It was my pleasure. We're there for each other. There's no conversation that is one-sided with us. I mean, and I've always appreciated that about our friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember, and you know, you were the first, just the story of how we met. I get show up to Defy the first day. My boss didn't talk to me. I don't think he said a word to me for 3 days, maybe a sentence or two, if I'm being fair.
No, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And then Dan Merle said, hey, Ken, we're going to put you in this office. And they walked me into this office, and there was a bunch of stuff that had clearly been moved off some other desks. And I grabbed a desk by the window, and up against the wall was you.
Yes.
Facing the wall, and you weren't sure where you were going to end up because this was your office.
It was at the time, and I was being pushed aside for Screen Junkies expansion. But, I mean, it made sense. Like, it's one of those
sure.
things, you know.
Yeah.
But it did mean that in the meantime, we got to chat.
We got the chat, and I'll never forget. This is a little stunt. If you're out there listening and you're looking for friends or you're looking for boyfriends or girlfriends, you got to look for little signs. Mm-hmm. And when I knew Mike Rainey was a good guy is, again, work was going on. So Dan dropped me off the office and had to go back to work on his trailer. Right. He was still editing at the time, too. And I sat there not knowing what my job was. My boss wasn't talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue what I was supposed to do other than I heard I was going to help build a network. You were like, hey, here's the Wi-Fi code. It's like, all right, this is the only person willing to give me any kind of help or guidance.
Look, we're all in this together, one way or another.
We are here.
We're all in the same race.
We're all here. We're all here together. And I'm glad to be here with you. You've done a lot. You are going to accomplish a lot more from the wild streets of Prescott, Arizona.
Oh, yes.
To the big city.
There we go.
Mike Rainey, thank you so much for coming on into the Knapsack Files.
It has been my absolute pleasure and my honor. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, your story is, you're going to find, will be inspirational to others.
I try.
You don't
I
think
try.
So. Well, yeah. Now, I know you're not, are you a huge Twitter guy? You're not on a lot.
I'm not. To be honest, I should be.
Should be.
Tell you what, I'll start tweeting tonight.
Okay.
And then by the
time.
But
you have one.
I have one.
What is it?
It's at Rainey Michael V.
Right.
V for Velociraptor. We'll go with that today. It changes on a daily basis.
I have to make sure I'm even following. We'll do this live on. Oh, yeah. Michael V. Rainey.
I don't. It has been at least 6 months since I did anything. But wow. You know what? I'm going to go home right now.
Okay.
And I'm going to post so that all your listeners tomorrow morning, they're, oh, that guy.
So I'm following you now.
Okay.
You and I have never. Yeah. I knew Twitter isn't your big thing.
Right.
Joey Kramer, Matt Robb, and James Wade, all the former Defy coworkers of mine, following you with me.
Oh, well, there we go.
We're small and mighty.
We're
so if you're
together.
Out there listening, go follow Mike on Twitter at Rainey Michael V. Rainey is Rain, E-Y, Michael, common spelling V. Find him. That will be in the description. And let him know. Let him know that you enjoyed his inspirational cheeseburger speech here. No, I think that was mine. I don't know. Do that. Thank you, sir. We'll follow your adventures. You can follow the Knapsack Files on Facebook by liking the official page and following me at Ken Knapsack. The Patreon page is up and running with some new adjusted rewards, some new goals, got some new followers. You guys are so great for supporting the Knapsack Files podcast feed as it grows and expands into 2018 and beyond. Got a lot of fun things going, and I'm happy to have you guys on board. You can listen to this podcast on Podomatic, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and TuneIn. A lot of choices for you. So that's it for Mike, for all of you trying to find your community. That's it. We'll see you next time.